Tonight on Blackhawks Live, a new season, different faces, and the drive to win.
Jones high slot, fires, Patson, rebound, score! Connor Bedard, Donato to Nazar over the blue line down the slot, he shoots, he scores! Frank Nazar on a breakaway!
Join Charlie Remiliotis as he dives into what's next for the Hawks. Here's Charlie.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
Welcome to the first Blackhawks Live show of the season right here on WGN Radio. Charlie Remiliotis here, honored to be sitting in this seat, and I have Jack Heinrich riding shotgun with me. First off, Jack, I want to say this. I want to thank you for everything you've done for me over the last couple weeks to get me comfortable. Watching you do it from afar has been super helpful. So I'm excited to work with you all year, and thanks for everything you've done for me.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was a fun, weird start. Not great hockey, but hopefully they're turning the corner. But yeah, no, I'm fired up. You're here, and we'll have a fun year.
So we have a fun show today. We're going to talk about the opening night roster for the Blackhawks that got finalized a few hours ago. We'll break down the lines, the pairings, the goaltending situation, the extras. We also have Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson coming up on the show. I recorded that before practice today, before they left for Utah. Some pretty good stuff in there. And then also going to project the Blackhawks' win and point total later on, and also Connor Bedard's goal and point total. And Jack, I think it's more fun if I have you stick around with this and make it more conversational. So as we break down the opening night roster, let's kind of go back and forth and bounce some ideas off each other. Sound good?
Sound good. See what I come up with.
Perfect. All right, let's go with the first line. This was pretty interesting right out of the gate. Ilya Mikheyev on the left wing with Connor Bedard centering the first line and Teuvo Teravainen. It's interesting because pretty much all of training camp, no, not even pretty much, literally all of training camp, Tyler Bertuzzi had been skating on a line with Connor Bedard, and they haven't necessarily been lighting it up in the preseason and scrimmages, but it's interesting that we went to practice today, and one day before opening night, the Blackhawks separated Bedard and Tyler Bertuzzi. Bertuzzi skating on the second line with Taylor Hall and Philip Kurashev, which we'll get to in a little bit. Interesting because I feel like while Bedard and Bertuzzi, again, didn't light up training camp, the preseason games or the scrimmages together, I actually felt like they were really solid in the scrimmages. I feel like Tyler Bertuzzi's game is so much better suited in the regular season when games actually matter. Let's put it that way. I don't think for his physical style, the way he plays, I think it's a really demanding brand of hockey. And I'm not surprised that he didn't really pop on my TV or on the ice during training camp and preseason, just because of I'm sure he's pacing himself for an 82 game season. But it was interesting that they did get separated. Now we did ask Luke Richardson about it after practice, and he said the first thing out of his mouth was, "We're still trying some things." So it didn't really sound like it's a slam dunk for tomorrow. Like maybe they were just toying with it today. But I thought it was interesting, Jack, that they separated Bedard and Bertuzzi, given the fact that they had been together for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I saw that too. Like when you and like the other reporters were tweeting out like the lines you saw, and I think they brought Bertuzzi in to like he plays that gritty kind of game. He can get goals near the net, and he can kind of be a protector for Bedard. I mean, we saw him getting feisty last game, but I don't think they want him doing that too much. But I think it'll be interesting to see. I think I agree with you. Their best bet is probably Bertuzzi, Bedard, and Teravainen, but I guess they're trying things out. I mean, Mikheyev with his speed, maybe they think that something's there, but I don't know. That'd be interesting to follow, especially they're on the road too, so they don't get that last change, so maybe they see something there, but it is interesting that it was very consistent besides that last preseason game that they played when they only sent really Bedard and a couple other regulars, but it'll be something to watch, I guess, tomorrow when morning skate happens.
Sure. And I think too, when you mention it, you bring in a guy like Tyler Bertuzzi, you sign him into a four-year contract. I think you kind of want him to get a long rope with Connor Bedard. And again, this could totally be a moot point by tomorrow morning if they're rolling lines and Bertuzzi is with Bedard.
Right.
But I just thought it was interesting that they got separated. you know, ahead of opening night. And it's interesting too, because Connor Bedard has, the Blackhawks have toyed around with a few different options with him. Like, he started training camp with Tyler Bertuzzi and Taylor Hall, and then they substituted Taylor Hall and put in Teravainen. So then it was Bedard, Teravainen, and Bertuzzi, and then it was Philip Kurashev getting another a crack with Bedard and Lucas Reichel in the Milwaukee game. So they're definitely toying with a few different combinations. But we'll see if Luke does it. I would like to see Bedard start with Tyler Bertuzzi, and then, you know, if it doesn't work, whether it's in the Utah game or just on the rest of the road trip, then maybe you explore a different option. But it's interesting though that they rolled with it, because Mikheyev had been skating on the third line pretty much all of camp.
Yeah, he'd been way, like, not really in the top six at all. So that's why I was like, whoa, different.
Let's get to the second line: Taylor Hall, Philip Kurashev, and Tyler Bertuzzi. We obviously mentioned Tyler Bertuzzi. I specifically want to discuss the second line center position. It almost feels like Philip Kurashev is kind of in that spot by default, because Frank Nazar got sent to the Rockford Ice Hogs. So that's the right move, by the way. I think you want to get him some pro hockey experience down in Rockford, get him mentally and physically preparing for an 82 game season in the pro, especially given the last 2 years in college, his freshman year got cut short because of an injury. So he really only played, it was like a handful of games as a freshman. And then last year, like, the most games you play in college is like early 40s. Right. And so, like, that's like half of an NHL season. And Frank did play at the World Juniors and he won a gold medal. So he did play a few extra games. But I think what you don't want to happen is Frank starts the season in the NHL, then maybe a month or two in, he hits a little bit of a wall, then you have to send him down to Rockford, and then you're kind of backpedaling a little bit, and then it's kind of a story. Like, if he just goes down to Rockford, works on his game there, I think it's better suited. And then on the flip side, you have Andreas Athanasiou, who you think or would hope would slide into that role given his skill set, like super fast player. He can play wing as well, obviously, but he's not a bottom six guy. So you were hoping that he could take control of that second line center spot. And it's weird because the Milwaukee game on Saturday, I feel like Athanasiou was actually one of the quieter players and everyone else popped. And so that was unfortunate to see. And he didn't take control of that. So it's, again, getting back to my main point, it's almost like by default, Philip Kurashev is in that second line center position, and it's not really where he's best fit.
Right, and it's interesting because, like, him and Bedard obviously had a connection last year, and that's like the one known that they have. So maybe they're trying to see where these other two can slot in and around all the new pieces they've got. So, yeah, I think you're right. It is kind of by a default, and I mean, it's a pretty good second line. I mean, it's a lot better than what we've seen in recent years with Hall and Bertuzzi with them. So maybe they're trying to get more offense. I mean, that's been a struggle for them, scoring. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's very interesting. Like, the bottom, not to skip ahead, but the bottom six is kind of what you thought it would be. But there's so many combinations at the top, I think. They're just trying to see what sticks at this point.
Right. And then the third line, we got Nick Foligno, Jason Dickinson, Joey Anderson. Foligno and Dickinson have essentially been together all of training camp. It's that winger position on the third guy on that line. It started out as Ilya Mikheyev. I want to say, was there one other guy that I'm not sure? There might have been one other that
I feel like Joey Anderson was maybe with them.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I think there might have been one more guy before Joey Anderson. Actually, I think they did just go straight to Joey Anderson, and then
they might have been a young guy in a game or something.
Yeah,
I think that's what it was.
That's Bellacy probably it.
Maybe or something.
Yeah, and so Foligno, Dickinson, and Anderson, that was actually a really productive line. I say productive, not necessarily offensively, but more in a shutdown role. Like, that they were really good defensively, really productive line, really effective shutdown kind of line. And Joey Anderson, I thought, had a really good training camp. Him and Ryan Donato, I thought, more of a bottom six role, those guys popped. And it's funny because Ryan Donato and Joey Anderson were probably the two guys that I pegged before the season that might be on the outside looking in, and with Reichel and Athanasiou in the lineup. But they performed so well in training camp that they kind of usurped both of those guys and ended up playing, ended up fitting into the bottom six. But I really like that third line of Foligno, Dickinson, and Anderson as the third line, not the second line that they kind of were forced into a role of last year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it's just a rock solid line. I mean, you know, they're going to be responsible and play the right way. And I mean, Foligno and Dickinson are going to go hit some people too. And Joey Anderson's a smart player. So he's really worked on just being, I mean, we talked to him, I think a couple weeks ago when I was there at practices, and he just has Joey Anderson just has a great mindset. Just like, if they want me here, I'll be ready. If they want me in Rockford, I'll be ready for whatever that brings too. So, I mean, he's a great guy in the room, and on the ice. I mean, you know what you're going to get from him. So it's a nice stable line, for the Hawks going into this opening game.
Yeah. And then that fourth line, Pat Maroon, Ryan Donato, Craig Smith, that was probably the best line in that Minnesota game at the United Center. Yeah. And I know there weren't a lot of positives in that game, but that trio, I mean, it's probably more indicative of the rest of the team. Like, if that was the best line, it's probably a little bit concerning, but it is to have a solid fourth line and to have a nice shutdown line in Foligno, Dickinson, Anderson. Here's what I'll say. I think the bottom six looks pretty decent on this Blackhawks roster.
Definitely.
The question mark when you're looking at this is the top six. Are they going to generate enough offense, especially with Lucas Reichel and Athanasiou on the outside, like not really taking total control? Like, I look at Maroon, Donato, and Smith, like that's a pretty decent fourth line. Like, they're probably going to log like 10 to 12 minutes a night, maybe even 10 to 11.
Yeah.
And I'm totally cool with it. It's just the Blackhawks have to make sure that they're getting that offensive production in the top six.
Yeah, I mean, Craig Smith was in that first preseason game was like the star of that game. He really, really played well. And I mean, this is what Kyle Davis was trying to do, is get some veteran presence, and they've got a real solid bottom six. And to support their top, it's just going to be finding the right combinations. And even with like the power play too, just finding offense is really going to be the key for them in this early going and throughout the season.
Let's get to the back end. So we got Alec Martinez is with Seth Jones, Alex Vlasic with TJ Brody, Nolan Allen, who is going to be making his NHL debut on Tuesday in Utah. He's paired with Connor Murphy. So that looks like it's going to be the six in Utah. The interesting thing is the separation of Vlasic and Jones. That had been a thing really since day one of training camp. I don't know why. I think Luke Richardson said he likes the veteran presence that Alec Martinez brings to that pairing with Seth Jones, which I thought was interesting because I think Luke was elaborating more on saying Seth. And I think this is something that I've said as well about Seth Jones is, he has this internal feels the need to have to do it all, and that's in part because maybe the Blackhawks haven't had the personnel on defense to have trusted pairings.
Yeah, he had a lot of guys playing with the last few years, cycling in and out.
And it's so different when Seth Jones was in Columbus. Like, he's playing with Zach Werenski, and like, he did not have to worry about Zach Werenski because Zach Werenski is an all-star caliber defenseman in his own right. In Chicago, especially his first couple years, he probably felt like he had to do it all because the quality of defensemen wasn't just quite there. And so I think putting Martinez with Jones might help stabilize Seth, or like let Seth kind of just focus on his own game and not feel the need to have to cover for Martinez, who's a veteran and multi Stanley Cup winner. But I thought the Vlasic and Jones pairing last season was probably probably their most consistent pairing, and they ended up separating them. So I'm wondering how long it will be before they go back to that, or how long that leash is going to be where Martinez and Jones are together and Vlasic and Brody are a thing.
Yeah, I mean, defense was a struggle for the Hawks last year. I mean, I remember Troy, I can't remember how many times he said, well, it's not really on Mrazek, that's not really on Soderblom. Like, they got to be better. So they bring in this veteran depth, and maybe they're trying to space out Vlasic and Jones, but I mean, at least they have that kind of like with Kurashev and Bedard. They know those two play well together, so maybe they're seeing if they can separate them a little bit. But hopefully, they could be more solid for them on the back end. And I like putting Nolan Allen with Connor Murphy, just someone who's been in the organization for many years with so much turnover and like a steady veteran he can rely on, especially going like on the road in your first NHL game. His mind's probably going to be spinning a little bit, but having him there can help him out.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing I am interested in seeing, Nolan Allen is with Connor Murphy. Nolan is playing on the left side, which obviously with Connor being a right-handed shot, he's playing on the right side. But Nolan Allen has been a guy that has played the right side in Rockford for the last couple years as he's been a pairing with Ethan Del Mastro. So there were times in the Minnesota game and sometimes in the Milwaukee game on Saturday where I saw Allen kind of drifting more towards the right side, and I don't know if that was more of a maybe me reading into a few shifts, or maybe internally that's going to be a little bit of an adjustment for Allen going to the left side, but I think it should be okay in the overall grand scheme of things. The one other thing on defense, Isaac Phillips, he was placed on waivers yesterday. He ended up clearing. I thought there was a chance that he might get claimed, but at the same time, it was such a busy waiver wire day in the NHL where all 32 teams are trying to get cap compliant. And so that if there was a time where the Blackhawks were going to try to squeeze through some guys, that was the day to do it. And it ended up working out. Phillips went unclaimed, but he didn't get assigned to Rockford. He is traveling with the Blackhawks, or he did travel with the Blackhawks to Utah, and he's part of the opening night roster. The Blackhawks have 30 days to keep him on the NHL roster before Phillips would need to go through waivers again if the Hawks wanted to try to get him to Rockford. So that's something to keep a note on. And the reason why it's noteworthy is because Wyatt Kaiser, who's been out for the last couple weeks, had a little health scare, but good to see him back on the ice today at practice. He's starting the season on injured reserve, and it sounds like he could be ready by the end of the road trip, which is a positive. And if that's the case, he would need to be activated from IR, and then one of those defensemen, either Allen or Phillips, will likely go down to Rockford. So it's going to be interesting to see which one that is, because, you know, if it's Allen, he's waiver exempt regardless. If it's Phillips, you know, that's if it's 30 days after, then it's fine. And then in net, Peter Mrazek, Arvid Soderblom, really no surprise there. Peter's going to be the starter in Utah. There is one back-to-back at the end of the week that Soderblom is probably going to get that start. And then once Laurent Brossois returns to practice, which he's been on the ice for several days, he's going to be activated, and then Soderblom will go back to Rockford. So that's the opening night roster for the Chicago Blackhawks. We've got much more to get to here on Blackhawks Live, including an interview with Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson. You're listening to 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, Charlie Romeliotis here in our downtown WGN radio studio. Earlier today, I sat down with Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson.
With Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson before traveling to Utah, first of all, have you ever been to Utah? Are you ready?
I've never been. Excited to go.
Yeah, neither have I, but it should be a fun atmosphere. All right, let's recap training camp. Officially in the rear view mirror, what did you think of camp as a whole, the competition?
I thought our training camp was actually very effective. I thought the on ice was really well, time well spent on the ice and practice and scrimmages. And then we built the roster in the summer, in the off season, to create competition. And I feel we got that, but it also gave us options as well. And we're probably going to test those options out as we go into the regular season. It's hard to really drill down on chemistry and get a good rapport going between players, in training camp when you're not playing full rosters in preseason and don't have that many games. So, that'll be something that continues, but the competition and from that aspect, I thought it was very successful.
Did you like the scrimmages right out of the gate as much as the media and fans did, just from an entertainment standpoint too? Like, what did you guys learn?
Yeah, less from an entertainment standpoint, but more so just getting the competition and the competitive juices flowing right out of the starting gate. So it was, I think it served a purpose from that perspective, and I think it just sets the tone and sets the compete level at a high spot right out of the starting gate. So
one of the standouts of camp, I think we can all agree, is AJ Spellacy. He probably hung around longer than we all expected, and maybe even you guys too. What did you see from him that you wanted to kind of reward him with a little bit more rope.
Yeah, no. Well, first of all, his play was such that he deserved to stick around, and then also the fact that he, you know, his background is unique, where he hasn't been playing organized hockey or competitive hockey for a really long time, and so getting that instruction at the NHL level, being around NHL players, NHL facilities, he was just a sponge and eating it all up. And so it was much about putting him in an environment to help him grow, not only as a player but as a professional. And so this was a great opportunity for him to do so. And so we kept him around. And, you know, if his play wasn't good enough, then he wouldn't have stuck around. But he performed on the ice too. And so it was beneficial from, you know, two standpoints, both on and off the ice.
Do you feel like some of the other younger players can see that and be like, okay, he was rewarded for his ice time or for his strong training camp preseason, and it wasn't like not like a case-by-case basis, but it's like, hey, if you are performing well, you are actually going to get an extended look before going wherever to improve your game.
Yeah, you know, ideally you want everything to be merit-based, right? And in a meritocracy, your play and your performance dictates that you either stick around longer, you get more playing time, whatever the level that may reach could be. So you hope that it's always, you know, they see it. It's a good example. It's a good standard and precedent to set. And so, you know, there's no real downside to it. It can only be upside in terms of, you know, rewarding someone for good play and good performance.
Well, I think we're all bummed that we weren't able to see Artem Lechenov here at training camp. He obviously suffered the right foot injury right before the prospect showcase. Were you guys just as bummed for him not to be able to kind of join the guys on the ice for the first few weeks and kind of get a look at him in a Blackhawks sweater?
Definitely, yeah. No, we were very excited about acquiring Artie and getting him into Chicago and then seeing him with our players. And then, you know, to have that injury right before we get going is certainly disappointing for us, but also for him as well. He wants to start performing. He wants to get going and showing what he's gotten, you know, starting his pro career. And so, you know, it's a little delayed, and so we'll have to wait a little bit longer. But, you know, I think he's getting some good work in now. It's still a little bit until he gets cleared and can join the team or join, you know, those full contact practices. But we'll see him eventually. But, you know, it would have been nice to see him earlier. So we'll just have to wait a little bit. The excitement will have to kind of stay tamped down a bit.
I did see him on the ice right before this interview. Is he, I don't know if you're able to shed some light, is he able to, like, join the team with you guys on the road trip and kind of get some practices in before you send him down to Rockford? Or how does that work?
Well, we can handle it any way we want. He's certainly allowed to travel. Just based on the travel schedule and our potential practice schedule, we don't know if that's the best situation for him. He'll probably get more work staying back, but that's something we'll decide in the next couple hours here as we kind of map out the schedule a bit more. But the option's there. Having said that, since he can't join the full team in practice, that limits his ability to get on the ice a little bit, so it may just be easier to keep him back and skate him in Chicago.
So on Saturday was the preseason finale in Milwaukee. Much better than the first five games, so we can all agree. Do you put stock into, you know, maybe not the record of the 0-5 preseason before the Milwaukee game, but just kind of how it was happening? Or is it kind of like, it's so hard to put too much stock into it because they're not meaningful games? You know, there are different rosters on both sides. Like, how do you view that from a macro perspective?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. You know, you don't want to completely write it off, but you also don't want to overreact to something. As you say, as we sit here today, we're 0-0. So, you know, you don't want to overreact, and you don't want to completely dismiss.
Sure.
You know, there's things that we can take and opportunities we can learn from in the preseason. But at the same time, you don't want to be too heavy-handed in you know, either changing things or getting down on any one player or line or D pairing or anything like that in particular. You just want to, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but also try and learn from it to the extent you're able to.
Two of the guys that got sent to Rockford were Kevin Korchinski, Frank Mazar. What was the thought process behind that? what message did you give them, and how did they kind of take that feedback?
Yeah, no, it was, you know, that was one of our big decisions coming into camp, was to see where they were going to shake out and where they're going to end up. In the end, we felt it was best for their development, you know, probably in the short and long term, that they go down to Rockford and play big minutes with lots of practice time, lots of development time, and we can give them a workload that they can handle and hopefully thrive in, and hopefully that'll, you know, enhance their abilities to come up at some point in the future and jump in and make an impact. You know, I think both of them are mature. They're both young, but they're mature, and they understood the path, the reasoning, and you know, in the end, they understood that we're going to be able to work with them full time to make sure that we develop them into the best players they can be.
Kevin specifically was probably in a tough spot because of last year. Obviously, the off-ice stuff was kind of got added onto his plate too, that I'm sure that was hard for him to navigate. But he was ineligible for Rockford, so it's like, publicly it could look as like a demotion, but it's really not. Can you share the example, or I think of Alex Vlasic, Wyatt Kaiser, they go to Rockford, and Rockford is used as more of like a developmental league, and historically not necessarily a demotion. Mm-hmm. Can you shed some light on how it shouldn't be viewed as a demotion? It's more of just kind of a progression of the actual long-term development of those guys.
Right, yeah. And the benefit of Rockford is that we can take... They practice way more. And there's the schedule is much less hectic and demanding than it is in the NHL, which lends itself to growing the games of our young players. We can take time. We can really individualize things. They can spend more and more time on... attention to individual habits and details and growth. And so it's just a great situation. We don't see it as a demotion because we're putting them there to grow so they can be even better in Chicago. And that's the whole point of a good development system, is that they can go somewhere out of the bright lights of the NHL, work on their game, and be even better for it when they come back. And we've seen that come to fruition in multiple cases with players we've sent to Rockford. We have the utmost trust in Anders Sorensen and his staff, as well as Mark Eaton and his development staff, to take players and make them better. And so we're excited to see where they take their games to down there, and that when they come back, they can thrive and not just try and play, not to make mistakes, so they can keep their ice time. We want them to come out and push the pace and push their own games and push their own limits up here to really help the team. And so I think that's the point we're going to get to, and I'm excited to see the strides they make this year.
Another example of that is Lucas Reichel, where it was like the first couple years he would have a stint in the NHL, then go back to Rockford, and you can already see the improvement for him. I felt like he came into training camp and he looks confident, but it didn't translate into the games quite yet. How big is this year for him to try to establish himself as kind of a fixture? Because it feels like goals are going to be hard to come by this year. And if you do want to increase that offensive output, I feel like he probably is going to put a lot of pressure on himself to be part of that solution.
Yeah, you know, and Lucas is one of the guys that is going to have to continue to battle and grow his game. And fight through some of the competition that we've established here. And so, you know, we'll see what Luke and the coaching staff comes up with on opening night. But if he's in the lineup, then he's going to have to fight to hold that spot. And if he's not in the lineup, he's going to have to fight and work to get into one. And so that's what the NHL is. That's what the highest level of pro hockey is. Nothing comes easy, and it shouldn't come easy. And so he's going to have to work and show what he can in his game and his growth to fight through the adversity that we're probably placing in front of him. So, you know, that's part of being a good pro, and part of being a good NHL player is being able to rise above that. And hopefully we can see some continued growth in Lucas. He's still a young player, and he's not a finished product by any means. And so it'll be important for him to continue to focus on what he can do to make himself better and develop into a everyday NHL player.
All right, so last year around this time, we were getting ready for Pittsburgh, and it was a media circus for Connor Bedard. How much are you looking forward to watching him in year two kind of with all that hoopla in the background now. Not to say that he's not going to get that attention on a nightly basis, but just having gone through it the first time, now he kind of knows what to expect.
Yeah, no, I think there'll be, from his standpoint, comfort in understanding what he's walking into. And what he's going to be walking into is probably less demanding than what he did last year. And so if there is that attention, if there is or there are those demands on him, he'll know how to handle it and take that challenge on. But I just don't think everyone's had him for a year, either locally or nationally. And so I think that demand and all of that is required of him should scale back a little bit. Granted, he's still a very attractive piece in the whole NHL landscape and in the hockey industry, and so there will be, these demands of him. But having gone through it for a year, and he's a year older, a year more mature, he can manage his schedule, more deftly this year and understand what is required of him. He should be able to just walk in and understand that it's kind of old hat to him now, and he can just focus on the hockey, not have to worry about too much the off-ice obligation. But so he should be good to go, and I think he'll probably be looking forward to a little less media attention on the opening road trip this year versus last.
All right, last one. Exit interviews last year. You were clear. It's time to take the next step in the rebuild. What does that look like for you? Like, we look at the end of the season a year from now. What do you hope to accomplish between now and the end of the season?
I think naturally the simple thing is we should be winning more games. We should see a little higher point total in the standings. I don't think there's any doubt there. And just better execution across the board on in our systems and in our, whether it be special teams, whether it be 5-on-5 play, and hopefully that translates into more success on the ice. And so, that's something that we expect walking into this year, based on the trajectory of where we're going and the new players we've added. I think that's a logical and reasonable expectation. But then again, it's the best league in the world, and so the coaches and the players are going to have to fight for those gains and fight for that new expectation and the new standards that we want to set. Because the reality is as much as you want to get better, so does everyone else. There are 31 other teams that are expecting the exact same thing. And so you've got to show up every night, and it's not just going to happen because you signed a couple of new players. It's going to be hard work, and it's going to be a lot of growth that's required, but that's the expectation, and hopefully the players and the coaches and the organization can rise to that challenge.
Awesome. Thanks for doing this, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, big thanks to Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson for that interview before the team left for Utah. We got one more break coming up. Jack and I on the other side are going to predict Connor Bedard's goal and point totals on the other side of the break. We'll wrap up Blackhawks Live next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, Charlie Romeliotis here with Jack Heinrich in our downtown WGN radio studio. We've got a fun Blackhawks Live poll question for today that we tweeted out a little bit ago, or posted on X, whatever it is now. How many goals were Connor Bedard scored this season? We had 10 to 29, 20 to 29, 30 to 39, 40 to 49, 50 or more. The front runner was 53%. 30 to 29, and that's where I fall too. So last season, Connor Bedard had 22 goals, 39 assists in 68 games. He obviously missed 14 games with a broken jaw. So his 82-game pace was 26 goals, 47 assists for 73 points. Jack, I'm going to go Connor Bedard scores 35 goals. He has 51 assists for 86 points in 82 games. So he's an above a point per game player, but I don't have him quite breaking that 90-point mark or 40-goal mark just yet.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I'm going 37 goals and 45 assists, and if I did my math right, I think that's 82 points, so I'm going a point per game. So pretty much the same, and I'm with the majority of people, 30 to 39. I think he will. I mean, he's got more people, more offensive talent around him, so I think those assist numbers will be up too, and I mean, we know the shot he has, so I'm hoping that's what I think that's what everyone's hoping for, is he takes that next step, point per game player.
Yeah, I wanted to go a little bit more aggressive, like flirt with 40, flirt with maybe 90 points, but then I'm like, man, I don't know where the goals and assists are going to come from if the power play is struggling.
Right.
And specifically, I was looking at I was like, oh, what did Connor McDavid do his year two? And Connor McDavid put up 30 goals, 70 assists, 100 points
man.
in 82 games. So I was like, if McDavid has put, and I think Austin Matthews was right at a point per game player his in okay. year two. So I think that's a good over under for Connor, right around that 82 to 86 point mark. So all right, that's going to do it for this edition of Blackhawks Live. Opening night is tomorrow against the Utah Hockey Club. We'll have the pregame show right here on WGN at 8:20. We'll talk to you then. Thanks so much to Jack Heiner for the help tonight. Talk to you tomorrow.